From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
For the week of March 20th, 2006, it is the Disc Golf News. I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this time, if you think you can make a difference at a higher level of disc golf leadership, well, Communications Director Terry Calhoun has a few things he would like to share with you. He is back this week to continue his summary of the Spring PDGA Board Summit meetings. And spring has finally arrived. It's the first week of spring for most of us in the Northern Hemisphere. Sorry for you, Kansas, Nebraska, some others who got a bunch of snow over the weekend. But it's spring for most of us, and that means it's roller season. Chris Sprague will be joining us to help you sharpen your roller technique in the 60-second clinic. And we've got a preview of the upcoming Gator Country Classic in Florida, results from the St. Paddy's Classic in California, and Pro World Doubles in Texas. It is all coming up on this edition of PDGA Radio News, brought to you by Innova Champion Discs at InnovaDiscs.com.
The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra-long glide will add D to your drive no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion line plastic, so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with a new Sidewinder from Innova, number one in disc golf.
The U.S. Coast Pros were all on hand in Orangevale, California, outside of Sacramento for the St. Patrick's Classic. Results coming your way, beginning with the Masters Division. And Kenny Lee says, Lissaman Brothers, I ain't afraid of no Lissaman Brothers. And he's going to be a winner by six over Kevin Couch. He'll take second place. Johnny Lissaman takes third for the Masters. In the Women's Division, it's all about the Burl. Carrie Burlauger is your winner by six over Kathy Manley, a hot up-and-coming pro. Stacey Pauley will take third for the ladies. In the Open Division, your world champion, Nate Doss, is a winner by a single throw over Jason Herman. Chris Sprague, they tie up for second place. More results, this time from Pro World Doubles in Wimberley, Texas. In the Masters, it's the team of Miller and McClellan for the ladies. Coffee and Justice, yes, three ladies teams. And for the Open Division, Ols and Redding are your winners. By the way, Juliana Corver and Des Redding played in the Open Division. They finished in 13th. That is how it went in Wimberley at Dubs. Time now for the 60-second clinic. Now, I have what is known around the disc golf world as a weenie arm, right? It just can't throw very far. 425 at best under perfect conditions, at least with a backhand throw. Now, a roller, different situation. I can get one 550. Heck, give me a little wind, I can go 600 feet with a roller. It's a handy shot to have. And if you don't have one, or you need to sharpen your technique, professional disc golfer Chris Sprague is here to help.
To learn to throw a roller, you need to be understand that the disc is going to finish on the plane that you started on. So if you're going to throw a roller, you're going to need to be able to lean back a little bit, and you need to be able to come over the top, because if you imagine, it's a little easier in person, but if you imagine a plane that if you're going to throw a hyzer, you start low and finish high. If you're going to throw a roller, you start high and finish low. A lot of people struggle with leaning back far enough to allow their follow-through to finish. They have trouble finishing the follow-through, and so and what happens is they have to go to a less stable disc, which then can affect their maximum distance. So the more that a player would lean back and stay on the same plane they start on, they can throw a more stable disc and accomplish a higher power roll. So if you're going to start high, you got to finish low. You know, that's the main thing, is just to follow through the line that you're trying to throw, which it's tough for some people to finish that follow through.
Professional disc golfer Chris Sprague of Iowa finished in second place last weekend at the St. Patrick's Classic in Orangevale.
Hi, this is Scott Martin, and you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
In the big picture, PDGA Communications Director Terry Calhoun returns to continue his summary of the Spring PDGA Board Summit meetings held recently in Arizona. Now, last week he told us about membership growth and some decisions on Worlds and some other good stuff. This week, he continues the discussion. We'll talk about upcoming elections, a constitutional rewrite, and, alas, increases in membership fees.
We have three board seats up for re-election this year. they are currently called the Communication Director, the Oversight Director, and the Competition Director. Four board seats stay the same until a year from now. That's pretty much what the turnover is. And then at the state and provincial contact level, half are up each year, and so half of those are up this year. Previously, the election took place in November and December, with new board members taking their seats on February 1st of the following year. 2 years ago, we moved that to an earlier schedule, so the call for nominations for board members is open right now, and the election will be June through the end of July, and new board members will take their seats in September 1st this year. The reason for that was because a lot of the decisions will be made at the October board summit in Augusta that affect the following year's season, and we felt it much more appropriate to be sure that the full board that was involved in the decision-making in the fall for the following year was in place for the following year, rather than filling it with three or maybe even four new people who might want to change things right in the middle of implementing a new year. And we changed that back, and I want to say with all the respect I can for my fellow board members, when we did that change, we had the choice of adding 6 months each to our terms and finishing up 2.5-year terms instead of 2-year terms, or taking 6 months away from our terms and finishing up with year and a half terms instead of 2-year terms. And we chose the latter, year and a half terms, not because we want to be off the board, but just to show that we're not power mongers and not out to control things. And we definitely feel that through the election process is how the PDG members can choose who represents them on the board.
Well, Terry, I think it would be hard for anyone to really accuse the board members of being power mongers, considering that over and over again, it seems like when there are elections, there's not a lot of competition. There's typically one person running for any particular seat. So with the elections this year only a few months away now, I think now's a great time to get people thinking about, is this something I want to do? So can you briefly run us through what it takes to be a board member and, kind of get some people thinking about it?
Well, let me start with state provincial contact, if you don't mind, Brian.
Absolutely.
In the past, sometimes it hasn't meant a lot to be a state provincial contact. A lot of state provincial contacts do work hard, but they're mostly answering questions about PDG membership and stuff to people, and they're also working. The ones who are doing a good job are working on statewide calendars to coordinate what's going on event-wise in the state. But those roles are being beefed up even as we speak. So state coordinators are going to be responsible for a lot more in the future, including the new course evaluation things, course evaluations, which are a new part of the course directory that are complicated. But we're working hard to get as many courses evaluated under a standard system of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 chains, like 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 stars. So the roles of state contacts are increasing, and so those jobs are more important. And I really do hope that people in the state who have the time and the skills to step up and stay connected and help the PDGA will do so. At the board level, what's really mostly needed at the board level is people who are willing to give and take, compromise, people who can make a good argument, listen to other people's good arguments, and put aside any biases or even commercial conflicts they might have of interest and act in the best interest of the Professional Disc Golf Association, which we hope is always in the best interest of disc golf in general. The positions open this year are Communication Director, Oversight Director, and Competition Director, but we are also having an election for a new set of bylaws. And if those are passed, board members will no longer be elected with specific titles of that sort. They'll be elected as board members, and the board will decide in its first meetings in September, October each year, who's going to take on which specific kinds of roles. So what kinds of things we need are more strategic and policy making, and the ability to see the big picture and to attend meetings timely and to see both sides of an argument rather than specific skills. Although specific skills and understanding the intricacies of competition or being able to write intelligently, all that kind of stuff is very important too.
And what kind of time commitment would somebody be looking at if they're thinking about running for one of these positions?
And I can't predict that for the future. I can tell you that as a communication director, my time commitment has been anywhere from 8 to 20 hours a week for the four and a half years or so that I've been on the board. It depends on what you end up doing as a board member. The hope is the time commitment in terms of hours doing hands-on kinds of things will go down with these changes, because part of the reason for the changes is to reflect the fact that the PDGA is gotten to the point where it's far more mature an organization, and important things that have continuity need to be handled and managed by staff, so we have that staff institutional memory for stuff. We have had just too many instances over the years of volunteers just breaking their backs and doing a wonderful job for the PDJ for a year or two and building up a resource or a project and then burning out and then dumping it with there being no way to have anyone follow it because we can't find anyone with their specific skill set to continue it. And our growth from now on is going to be in a very considered kind of way. And when we are doing something new that looks successful and it's going to be a part of the institution going forward, that we're looking more to hiring people or at least compensating the volunteers involved for their work in it rather than just relying on volunteers for most of the hands-on stuff, which is not to say there's going to be any end of volunteer work because there's not.
No, there is never, ever an end to volunteer work. Now, Terry, you had mentioned a potential change coming up where there wouldn't be specific seats like the communications director on the board, but they would just be board seats, and that would require a change in bylaws, which would mean a constitutional rewrite, which I understand is currently in the works.
Yeah, actually, to tell the truth, the first time I had to refer to the PDJ Constitution to try to resolve an issue almost 5 years ago, I nearly gagged when I read the Constitution. Not because of its intent or because of its lack of value, but because it's 30 years old. And it was written, I mean, I recently read where it was, most of it was dictated to someone's wife while they drove across country to a tournament. And it was written for a very small organization, a very fledgling organization, with limited scope and limited ideas as to what it might end up doing. And it's literally a patchwork document that's impossible to follow in terms of governance right now. Most sports of our size, and the PDGA is getting up close to $1.5 million a year budget, is don't have constitutions at all. They have bylaws. They have bylaws that are mostly boilerplate legal language that are required to be there by the incorporation laws of the states they're incorporated in. So we've been trying ever since for 4 years to get someone to rewrite them. It's a big job. We had a couple people assigned the job. They were unable to do it. And then we appointed Kirk Yeo to complete Bruce Brakel's term as the oversight director last winter. And Kirk has done an excellent job. I haven't seen the document, but he read aloud to it from us and described the kinds of stuff he's been looking at the summit. And we hope that the board will see it at our next monthly teleconference to approve it for inclusion on the ballot for the election coming up this summer.
Once the document has been basically established by Kirk Yeo, it's going to be presented first to the board and then to the membership for ratification. Is that correct?
Yeah. The board will decide whether we agree that it's in decent enough shape and accomplishes the kinds of things we ask Kirk to accomplish with it to put to the membership for a vote. And if it is, then we'll do that.
Now, on to a topic that may cause some groans. The membership dues, I understand, are going to be changing.
Yeah, well, the groans will come from me, too. I wrote a check for 6 memberships this year. 2 co-workers, my son, my wife, and my son-in-law and myself. the dues are changing. Well, we haven't had a big increase for 3 years. And in the future, I'm recommending, and I think the PDJ will follow the pretty standard association management model of raising the dues just a little bit every year rather than waiting for 3 or 4 or 5 years until you get people groaning and moaning about it. But the junior fees will be $25 starting January 1st, 2007. AM fees will be $50, and the pro will be $75. And we made another change with respect to dues rates. We're not calling the 17, 18, 19 year olds juniors anymore. In terms of dues, we're just calling them members, and they're going to be paying the full $40 rate, $50 rate. It doesn't sound fair to us to have someone winning AM Worlds who paid junior fees to join the organization. So they're getting bumped up in there too.
Well, and essentially, this really isn't a major increase. I mean, previously, the AMs have been paying $40 a year for their membership. The pros have been paying $55. Now, explain to, especially some of the pros who are going, oh, man, but I only play 2 tournaments a year. Why do the pros pay more than the AMs?
Well, since the PDGA is mostly AMs now, it's mostly, I think, something like 80% of the members are AMs, we spend disproportionate PDGA dollars on the pros, if you consider especially the national tour and the various major events that involves pros. a larger amount of the PDGA's budget is spent on pros proportionally than is spent on AMS, and we hear from AMS about that all the time, and this is an attempt to turn that around a little bit. And it's not an attempt to turn that around a little bit that's all by itself. We, after trying in various ways with external people to raise substantial sponsorship dollars, we're now paying a stipend to Dr. John Dussler to work on looking for larger sponsorships for national tour and other events that pros will benefit from. And we are also recognizing the facts of how being a pro has changed by offering an amnesty, the details of which is going to be worked out by staff. I don't know exactly when it'll start, when it'll end, or what the rating point situation will be, but we approved a period of amnesty during which anyone who has been a pro, has been classified as a PDGA pro, can choose if they wish, if they're under a ceiling of ratings, to actually become an amateur again and pay in 2007 amateur dues instead of pro dues.
Sounds like all in all, it was a very productive summit.
Yeah, there was a whole lot more too, and I wish I had my notes here. For example, we heard from Timmy Gillett and his crew at discgolftv.com, who are going to be doing a lot of filming and a weekly TV show on the web, and we've offered them a little bit of financial support for this year, and because this year's budget was already committed, we'll be able to offer them more, we hope, next year, and I hope and wish they'll be very successful. It's exciting what they're doing. And the dues revenues, I mean, because of the fact that AMS are 80% of the membership, that $10 fee for AMS creates a huge amount of revenue for the organization, and that's going to go almost entirely into staff support of the various kinds we need to make things run smoother for people and give better services.
Terry Calhoun, thanks for making some time for us, and thanks so much for the many, many, many volunteer hours you have put in over the years for the PDGA and for disc golf.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned disc golf too, because it's not just the PDGA. I spent 3.5 hours climbing over piles of industrial waste and in an Ann Arbor park this weekend, trying to lay out the latest course that's going to go in here in Ann Arbor. So it's all sorts of disc golf volunteer work. And, you know, the one thing we on the board are quite cognizant of is that anybody with any experience or maturity in disc golf actually spends huge amounts of time volunteering for disc golf already. It's that kind of sport.
PDGA Communications Director Terry Calhoun spoke to us from his office in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News. A couple of weekends from now, the top pros are all going to be in Gainesville, Florida for the 12th annual Gator Country Classic. The tournament director is Sean Harrigan.
Well, this is our 12th year, and the weather's great in April. You know that's right. And it's a fun time here. We've been doing stuff so long now, it pretty much runs like clockwork. We run a leaderboard, and everybody seems to have a blast. Feed them lunch both days. We had Barry Schultz win last year in Open, Greg Hosfeld in the Masters Division, and Carrie Burlager tore him up in the Women's Pro. And in the past, though, we've had Ken Climo win in the Open Division. And, of course, we can't count out Junebug. Brad Hammack seems to pull some magic down here, too. We have a few tight holes. Couple open holes, couple long holes. There's a mixture. We've extended some of the lengths on some of the holes for the pros, and I think you enjoy it. We got a few water and OB shots, so it's pretty challenging. At the same time, you can really score good if the wind's down and your putting's on. We've been raising money for the St. Francis House here locally for 10 years now, and we're really proud of that, you know, giving them quite a few thousands of dollars, which helps us move along in the community also. But we've got such a fun group of people and staff. Everybody has a good time. They'll treat you like your family, and it really doesn't get any better than that.
Sean Harrigan is tournament director for the upcoming Gator Country Classic on April 1st and 2nd in Gainesville, Florida. The first weekend of spring this weekend, March 25th and 26th, you have no excuse. You must get out and enjoy a cool PDGA event like the Melbourne Open in Melbourne, Florida. That's the national tour event for pros in Red Rock, Texas. It's the 8th Red Rock Show. Seaside, California, hosting the CSUMB Otter Open in Owensboro, Kentucky. It's the Daviess County Open. That's the first of the Bell South Bluegrass Series. Stephen City, Virginia, hosting the Sharondo Spring Breakout. It's No Foolin' Number 17 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Huntsville, Alabama, hosting the Alabama Amateur Open. In Chattanooga, the Grapevine Classic. The March Mush in Grand Ledge, Michigan. Duncan, Oklahoma, hosting the Duncan Lake Hill Climber Open. Columbia, South Carolina, it's the March Madness. That is a pro match play event. And in Roswell, Georgia, Lost in the Woods Classic. Get the full list at pdga.com. Finally, this week, if you took our advice last fall and you spent the winter getting a new course put in, well, you may very well have something that the PDGA would like to have. We're looking for recent letters of support written by, like, your parks department. So let's say you wanted to get a course in, so you talked to a community park, up the road and said, yeah, we need a letter of support, and you got one. That's the kind of thing we're looking for, because the PDGA puts together an information kit, and whenever somebody contacts the PDGA and says, hey, I'm trying to get a course in, or I'm trying to do this disc golf thing for my community, can you give me information? We send those people this information kit, but we need to constantly be refreshing that information, make sure it's up to date, and make sure it's, you know, glowing and positive and all that stuff. So if you've got a letter, preferably from like a parks department or a governor or something, like Otto says disc golf is good, you know, that's the kind of thing we need. So drop a line to the office. That's office@pdga.com. Say, hey, I've got a letter of support. You can have a copy of it, and we'll work out details from there. And we are always looking for story ideas from you. If you've got some interesting thing going on in your community, you got a player who's doing something special, you got a big event coming up, you got ideas, we'd love to hear them. Drop a line to pdgaradio@pdga.com. And that, my friends, is the Disc Golf News for the week of March 20th. For the PDGA, I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks to our sponsor this week, Innova Champion Disc. And until next time, I hope you'll get out there, huck some plastic, stay out of the shul, and keep them in the fairways.